It's member-supported Hawaii Public Radio and All Things Considered. A good afternoon to you. I'm Dave Lawrence. Thank you very much for listening. Today, we're very lucky we are doing this portion of the show in our Atherton Performing Arts Studio, where we've been many times before. And today, we've got a band that are going to be at the Blue Note through Friday. It's the Rippingtons, featuring Russ Freeman. Russ Freeman on guitar, multi-instrumentalist, founder. We've got Brandon Fields on sax, Dave Carasone on the drums back there. It's been sounding real good so far, warming up. Rico Bellet on the bass, Bill Heller on the keyboards. Welcome, you guys. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having us, Dave.
You are welcome, Russ. It's great to have you here and all the dudes set up to play. And we'll hear you guys play in just a moment. But one of the fun things looking at the history of this group and thinking of the ways that you guys got introduced to music and the evolution that you've had, I guess thinking about yourself, how is it? You're 10 years old, I understand. It's like a friend of your father's. Explain how at that really young age, this instrument, which you've been known for all over the world, came to be part of your life.
Well, that's a great question. I grew up in Nashville, Tennessee. My dad is a research scientist, and he was also a classical guitarist. Was his hobby. So he got to be friends with some studio guys in Nashville, some really excellent studio players. And I started taking lessons from this great guitar teacher, John Pell. And he was at Belmont for years and years, actually. I think he just retired. He was a fabulous teacher, and he taught me classical guitar. It was my first real instrument. And I remember in 68, Hendrix came out with his beautiful rendition of the Star Spangled Banner. It's the first time I'd heard it. And I was playing acoustic guitar, so I was exposed to so many different great styles of music in Nashville. The guys would actually take me in the studio, and I'd watch them make records. And then they let me sit in the studio, not in the booth, and I would ask all these dumb questions that any kid would ask, and they were very gracious. So that's how I got started.
That's a great way. And when you're young, you always have those curious questions. I'm sure they're like, what's this kid asking that for? Brandon, what led to you picking up the sax, and how old were you when that occurred?
I was 10 when I started playing alto, but my mom was a piano player and alto saxophonist in high school, and she was playing piano in college until she had me. And so she started me on piano at 5, and my three younger sisters, we all started playing piano at 5, and then they had a violin around the house.
Amazing.
So I played that at 8, and then they just would go to garage sales and pick up instruments and put them on the wall outside my bedroom, and I'd go come home after school and pick one up and just make noise on it till one day the noise felt a little better than the other days.
We owe your mom a lot, is what it sounds like.
Yeah.
She's, that's incredible. Dave, what led to you getting behind the drum kit?
My father played drums. He was a straight ahead drummer from Cleveland and came out west and had his family. I was the youngest. I had three older sisters. He tried to get everyone into music. They didn't really take to it. But you put a drum set in a garage, I think most...
Someone will start banging on
it. That's right. And that was me. And I thought every kid had a drum set in their garage. I started so young. So it was just that, you know, just kept doing it.
I had one in my garage. My parents had Ludwig four-piece Sparkle Silver. So I'll tell you my two favorite.
Sparkle Blue.
Yeah, nice. I'll tell you my two favorite drummers. You tell me yours first. Who are your two favorites?
Well, as a kid, it was Ringo all the way. You know, the Beatles, the Monkees, and then Led Zeppelin happened, and it was over for me.
So it's Bonzo is one.
Bonzo, you know, of the rock thing, of the popular drummers, those are the guys for me. But of the guys that I like to listen to now, it's in Tony Williams and Steve Gadd and Vinnie Colaiuta. Those guys are great, you know.
Cozy would have been my number two.
Cozy Powell?
The late great.
Yeah, great.
And when I think of your double bass playing, it reminds me of that. Rico, also a keyboardist. Which came first, bass or keys for you?
I started on the piano. And keyboards back in the 80s, you didn't have powered monitors and everything, so there was so much gear to pack down. After the gig, I switched to bass because I never had any time to talk to the girls afterwards.
It's always those smart utility moves.
I saw the bass player one cable put away and he's ready to go.
You're like, hello, that's talking to me.
That's how that happened.
And is there a certain person you think who played a role in?
As far as bass goes?
And just like a person, like the mom, the dad, the
teacher. Oh, my father's a pianist, so that's where it came from. And we always had nannies that played music, and there was always music in the house. So,
and you can kind of really, it's just amazing when you hear all these stories, you realize what it can lead to. So this early childhood education and exposure to stuff. And you grew up in a very musical household, I understand.
Yes, I did. Yes,
tell us
a
little bit about it.
So I grew up in a house, my mom was Italian, my father was Jewish, but being, my mom had, her mom used to live with us. So my Italian grandmother used to live with us. And all my uncles used to come over on the weekends and serenade her with guitars and singing, and they would sing old Italian songs. So by the time I was around 8 or 9, my mom and dad decided, well, let's get the kids music lessons. I had a brother who was about a year and a half older than me. So we went to a local music teacher, and he gave us an aptitude test. And after that test, he determined my brother was going to play guitar, and I, at the time, was going to play accordion. And I said, wait a second. There's no accordion in the Beatles. How could this be? But I started on accordion and then switched to piano when I was about 13 or 14.
That's incredible. Well, it's a great story, and we're really blessed to have all of you here in the studio with your instruments, and I think it's important to take advantage of that. Would you like to lay down a song for us?
Sure.
Does that sound good?
Sounds fun.
And this is for All Things Considered. We're very excited. The Rippingtons featuring Russ Freeman live in our Atherton Performing Arts Studio. Thank you. Tasty business for sure here on All Things Considered with the Rippingtons featuring Russ Freeman and live in our Atherton Performing Arts Studio, which is a great thing to have. And they're at the Blue Note through Friday. You guys, really appreciate, by the way, that was really tasty. Great to have you in the room. And as I was telling, it might have been my boss, you guys have a unique kind of imagery that's associated each record. There are some bands that have done a collection of albums where they either use the same logo or same artist on there, or maybe similar designs. And if you get True Stories, latest one from you guys, you continue that. And yet, I also understand you're an illustrator. I don't think you're the one who did the cat that has been part of your history, but speak to this really, what I think is an interesting part of your visual repertoire.
The Jazz Cat is drawn by a brilliant artist named Bill Mayer, who lives in Atlanta, a good friend of ours. And we found out about his artwork through a poster he had done in 1984 for the Atlanta Jazz Festival. So we called him and said, hey, Bill, would you draw this original version of this cat for our next CD, which was the Kilimanjaro CD? And he did. And ever since, he's done original illustrations of the Jazz Cat for us.
That's amazing. And I understand that even sells some of the CDs sometimes.
Oh, I'm sure it does. Well, he's a very, very accomplished artist.
No, and it's cool. It reminds me of the Montreal Jazz Festival. They have the little cat that,
right,
that they use sometimes. And another topic that to me is a fascinating one. Sometimes a lot of bands use their music to give back to those in need. Sometimes they do benefit shows. Sometimes they do things like work with the American Association of Music Therapy, using your music as a therapeutic tool. And if you can, just give a little highlight to how that came to be and what occurs.
Well, I think it was in the late, maybe mid-90s, I started getting some letters. And one letter in particular was from someone who said that they'd woken up out of a coma to our music, and they were fans. And I thought, well, that's incredible. I mean, how many people wake up to your music, you know,
sure,
and brings them out of the coma? And they were just recounting this life story. So I thought, well, that's fantastic. And then it happened again. I had a second letter, and it happened a third time. And so it was astounding that there was something going on. So we became aware of this National Association of Music Therapists, got in touch with them, and they said, oh, this is a real thing. So we started doing concerts, actually, in all these different facilities, and became aware of that. So it's an amazing thing.
Wow, the power of music. And those three were all comas?
There were. And in fact, this just happened to me twice again recently. So the power of music speaks.
On so many levels, can be a healing force. And that's another area. Final question before we wrap it up with you guys. The set list for the shows, when you have a long career, you know, sometimes bands will find there's a rhythm to how the songs work best together. Sometimes they flow into each other. It's a good one for solo or different crowd pleasers. And then you have the issue of hardcore fans versus the real casual ones. You talk a little bit about what's going to go into the shows that people have a chance to see here.
Well, that's a really good question. And we think about it all the time. There are definitely some stalwart songs people probably expect to hear. And of course, we swap them out. We have over 200 songs,
right,
now. And a lot of them, I mean, we've had hits that we don't even play. and songs we've taken out and rotated. But we're always mindful about what the crowds want to hear. And yet they're so supportive of us over the years. It's pretty amazing.
You're very lucky to have a legacy like that. And it's good to hear you appreciate it, too, because it's not an easy thing. There are a lot of musicians. There aren't a lot of musicians who end up with the Rippingtons, you know, and having a long career out of it. Well, how about one more song while we have you in here for ATC? Does that work for you talented gentlemen?
Sounds fun.
And again, it's the Rippingtons featuring Russ Freeman. They're through Friday at the Blue Note. And True Story's latest album, and they are playing live for us here on All Things Considered in our Atherton Performing Arts Studio. Thank you. How about that? Rippington's featuring Russ Freeman live in our Atherton Performing Arts Studio. It's All Things Considered. Bill Heller on keys, Rico Bellet on the bass, Dave Carasoni on the drums, Brandon Fields on the sax, Russ Freeman right up front on the guitar, and you guys are through Friday at the Blue Note. Had a lot of fun. Thank you so much for being on All Things Considered, and wishing you a whole lot of luck with your visit to town. Extraordinary.
Thanks so much, Dave. Great to see you.
You're welcome.